I'm Brandi Cruz. The following remarks were delivered to a gathering of Washington State Republicans at the Whatcom County Lincoln Day Dinner on March 23rd, 2024. So I struggled with what to talk to you about tonight. That's not really true. I didn't struggle with what to talk to you about. I struggled with whether I was brave enough to say what I wanted to say. So I... God, I love you guys. Well, when I'm invited to speak to groups, you never want to offend someone. You don't want to be too controversial. And so I actually had reached out to a few of your fellow party members, and I said, hey, are there any topics that are off limits or that wouldn't go over well in the room? And I got some good advice, and then I decided to ignore that good advice entirely. Yes. You know, there's too much at stake for me to be polite. There is too much at stake to worry about who I offend or to worry about if I'll ever be invited back. As we sit here tonight, we are in the final battle of a war. A war that has pit sanity against insanity, pragmatism against idealism. A war that has sacrificed the public good in favor of a twisted idea of progress. It's a war that began a long time before I moved here, 15 years ago. It started silently and it was mostly waged in the shadows. In fact, most of us didn't even realize that there was a war being fought. We were too caught up in our own lives and our own problems. And then one day, not too long ago, that war was on our doorsteps. We thought that war would never reach us, and we were wrong. And because too many of us sat on the sidelines for too long, one side is no doubt winning that war decisively. They have won battle after battle after battle. And they have now spent the past 10 years forcing their way of life, their values, their idea of progress on everyone in their path with little resistance. Until now. We are in the final battle of this war. The good news is that no matter how late we are, no matter how much damage has already been done leading up to this point, everything comes down to this moment. This battle will decide whether we have enough fight in us. This battle will determine whether we have what it takes to win, or whether we surrender this state we love to the very ideology that has all but destroyed it. I believe that a Bob Ferguson governorship is the point of no return for the state of Washington. And it's not just Bob Ferguson. It's what Bob Ferguson represents. And that is complete one-party control of our lives. Which is why I have committed to using every ounce of influence I've built up, every opportunity at my disposal, to make people understand just how dangerous he is and just how much is at stake. And just how important it is for those of us who understand that to put the petty disagreements and purity tests aside and focus on the difficult task ahead. To the extent that I have strayed from that mission, I apologize. Many of you in this room already know that I have endorsed Dave Ryker and I am actively campaigning on his behalf. But the truth is that I have no loyalty to Dave Ryker. I have no loyalty to the Republican Party. I have loyalty to my family. I have loyalty to my husband. I have loyalty to my friends and my neighbors. I have loyalty to this state I love. I have loyalty to this country, and I have loyalty to the Constitution. And for those reasons, my loyalty lies with whoever I believe is the most likely to be voted into a position to protect those things, My endorsement of Dave Reichert is nothing more than an assessment of probabilities. It's that simple. But to be clear, now I don't know if Sebi Bird is still in the room. To be clear, somebody says, I can get him. To be clear, Republicans are blessed to have two patriots willing to lead the side of sanity into this final battle. Two men who have spent their entire lives in service to others and who now willingly put themselves under a grueling spotlight that not a single one of us in this room, myself included, could endure without some of our flaws being illuminated. For Dave, that spotlight has led to questions about his commitment to the cause of conservatism. For Semi, the spotlight has led to questions about things he's done in his past. Let me say very clearly, there is not one person in the race for governor who I would not go to battle with against Bob Ferguson. Yes. For the time being, I will proudly stand side by side with Dave, with my head held high, and I will take whatever arrows come my way. I've been called a rhino and even a socialist, a wolf in sheep's clothing, member of the establishment, someone who quit her high-paying job in mainstream news to tell the truth, a member of the establishment. Give me a break. There are a lot of people, and I blame only passion, there are a lot of people who have lost sight of the bigger fight. And I am not innocent in this. While I spend most of my time pointing out the policy and personal failures of Bob Ferguson, something I do with quite a bit of joy, I have also used up energy, precious energy, dismissing Semi Bird's campaign as not realistic or as a distraction. That ends today. And if it is Semi Bird who advances in the race for governor, I will stand side by side with him if he'll have me. Just as I hope every person in this room would stand side by side with Dave. In fact, this might not be popular, but if Republicans split the vote in the primary, which is a possibility, and Democratic State Senator Mark Mullett advances instead, I will knock on doors for that man until my legs give out beneath me. There's a quote associated with the Apollo 13 mission, failure is not an option. Well, that sounds nice, but failure is an option. Not only is it an option, it is a distinct possibility. To act otherwise would be foolish. It's not easy to overturn 40 years of precedent, and it's damn sure not easy if you don't have a united front. Not only do all of you in this room need to be united, but you need to bring in people who have never been on your side before. Independents and moderate Democrats. How do we expect to do that if we're not all on the same page? The machine that you're up against is immense. It has almost endless funds, a media ecosystem that skews in its favor, and a base that, frankly, spends more time getting out the vote than complaining about how we vote. And they are more power-hungry and determined than ever before. Democratic Party Chair Shasti Conrad wrote this a few months ago, quote, "With supermajorities, we can clean up the state constitution. My goal for 2026." That's the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. With supermajorities, we can clean up the state constitution. If there is something more damaging than one-party rule, it is one-party rule that even a veto can't rein in. And they will not stop there. I have every belief that if Bob Ferguson is elected in November, if Democrats strengthen their majority, they will seek to remove the people's right to referendum and initiative. This past year, while Let's Go Washington collected signatures in an unprecedented effort to overturn key Democratic policies, the state party used a tip line to encourage harassment, intimidation, and vilification of citizens who were engaged in the lawful initiative process. While that was happening, the Democratic Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, said nothing about it publicly. The Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, called the initiative effort disappointing and said she was saddened, that so many citizens would dare use their rights under the Constitution to push back against bad policies. Initiatives and referendums are the last remaining check people in this state have on democratic control, and we would be foolish not to believe that they will work to get rid of it. Now, all of that said, let me be very clear. I'm actually more optimistic about politics in Washington right now than I have been in the 15 years I've been here. Can you tell? Do I scream? Do I just ooze optimism? Yeah. Super optimistic. Yes. The success of the Let's Go Washington initiatives prove that people across the political spectrum across the state are waking up, that they are starting to understand just how bad one-party rule has been. We have a worse public safety crisis than ever before. As was pointed out earlier, the fewest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation, an attorney general who is using the power and the influence of his office to politically prosecute our men and women in uniform. We have a homeless crisis that we spend billions of dollars on, and it has only gotten worse. The homeless industrial complex is a real thing. We have a drug crisis and an attorney general who wants to be the governor, who's on record saying in the past 2 years that he supports decriminalizing drugs. In a state with a drug crisis where a record number of people are dying of fentanyl, decriminalizing drugs isn't only a dumb idea, it's dangerous. One-party rule has also left parents. This is an issue that is one of those that can transcend politics. We're in a place where the government believes it can parent your kids better than you can. It can't. Parents know that. And that is going to be a winning issue in November. There is a perfect storm of scenarios that are aligning ahead of November. First, the three very popular initiatives that are heading to the ballot. One to repeal the carbon tax, another to make the long-term care tax optional, and a third to repeal the unconstitutional tax on capital gains. At the same time, Democrats at the end of the legislative session, I laugh over this one because it must have been so hard for them to do, they had to pass three Republican initiatives into law after months of vilifying them, after months of calling them a MAGA right-wing paid by some rich guy effort. They had to spend the final days of their legislative session passing them into law, restoring police pursuits, strengthening parental rights, and codifying no state income tax into law will take effect 71 days from today. On top of that, this legislative session was frankly disastrous for Democrats, despite controlling both the House and the Senate. Some of their key priorities failed to make traction thanks to immense and unprecedented public pushback. That includes rent control, failed. Paying striking workers unemployment benefits, failed. And various bills that would have made life easier for violent criminals, including a bill that would have given serial killer Gary Ridgway the right to vote, serve on a jury, and run for public office. Failed, thankfully. So if you're keeping track, That's 800,000 voters from across the political spectrum who signed on to initiatives to push back against Democratic policies. Democrats having a horrible session, which was capped off by having to vote three initiatives into law. And now, they are so focused on trying to make sure those other three initiatives do not pass that they have to divide up their war chest and their political capital to do it. All of it leaving an opportunity for Republicans to capture the governor's office for the first time in 40 years. And when you do it, if you do it, but just for positivity's sake, let's say when you do it, you will not be doing it for yourselves, you will not be doing it for your party, but you will be doing it. I have full faith. You will be doing it for the good of the state of Washington. And to that end, there's one more point I want to make tonight. I'm a student of history, and I particularly enjoy in reading history about President Grant. Now, history hasn't looked back so kindly on his presidency. Nicole, our producer, ruined that for me. She made me listen to a podcast about President Grant where everybody was saying all these bad things about him. And here, I love the guy. He's like my hero. There's two reasons why I respect President Grant. One is that he didn't seek out power. People believed in him enough to give it to him. The second is that he was gracious in victory. So if the day comes and the battle I spoke of is won with the help of the people in this room, we have one important, albeit difficult task, and that is to be gracious in victory. To realize that those who let ideology get the best of them and took us down a dark path are still our fellow citizens. They are still our fellow Washingtonians. And in order to move the state forward and start to repair what has been broken, we cannot forget that. General Grant said after the Confederacy surrendered in Appomattox, quote, "I felt like anything rather than rejoicing at the downfall of a foe who had fought so long and valiantly and had suffered so much for a cause, though that cause was, I believe, one of the worst for which a people ever fought and one for which there was the least excuse." He was talking, of course, about slavery. President Grant believed so much in being gracious in victory that even when the enemy, an enemy that was fighting for something that Grant detested so much, even when he defeated them, he realized at the end of the day that they would still be his fellow Americans and that the only way to move the country forward was to remember that. We cannot see our fellow Washingtonians as the enemy, disagree as we may. And if we don't find a way to be gracious in victory and to focus on moving everyone in this state forward, then we will be standing here 20 years from now, even worse off than we are. So I encourage you to go, fight for what and who you believe in, even if we're fighting for different people. But do not let those fights distract from the real battle ahead, the only battle that matters. And do not lose sight of what it is that we're fighting for. A government for the people. We're fighting for this state and every single soul in it. And that is the only cause that matters. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for listening. If you like the message of that speech, be sure to become an Undivided subscriber and join us for our shows during the week. You can sign up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com.